This one's good if it goes.
Oh, my goodness.
Cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go.
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
I guess you got to hope for a dramatic 40.
Oh, boy.
Oh, they got it. Jones. Oh,
yes.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to your world's greatest podcast, Championship Edition. It's Championship Week. But before we get to Championship Week, I have a suggestion for every single conference in college basketball. It is great that we've had a season. It's great that we're going to have Championship Week. It's great that we're going to have an NCAA tournament. But if you look back a year ago, when college basketball in the world was changed through this pandemic, a lot has happened. And I'm so excited that we're back to playing and that we're going to have some type of closure for our season. But I really suggest, and I strongly urge every single conference tournament out there, prior to the start of your conference tournament, have a moment of silence for those who we lost during the past year to this pandemic. The mothers, the fathers, the uncles, the aunts, the grandparents, the brothers, the sisters. I think it would be such an incredible, compassionate gesture to take a step back and have a moment of silence and reflect on everything that's gone on this past year and those loved ones that we've lost, to put in perspective really what's gone on in the past year. So I have a strongly urge conference tournaments directors and commissioners and directors of basketball operations, if you're listening, please take a moment to listen and hear and have some compassion and have some appreciation. Yeah, it's great that we're playing games, but this past year has impacted so many and devastated so many families. And I think it would be something that really would mean a lot to a lot of people. Having said that, fan, we are going to get into conference tournaments. Let's start with the Big Ten. Yesterday, the Big Ten, you saw what happened. Michigan State got the win that they needed to secure another bid into the NCAA tournament. When you look at the Big Ten bracket, Dan, give me the game that you are most looking forward to in the second day of the tournament.
All right, before we do, all right, and I'll get to that in a second. You and I were talking. You and I were on the phone when Michigan and Michigan State were playing yesterday. And this is the way coaches look at games. So a little insight here. Seth Greenberg said, man, Michigan State's getting a good whistle today. And that's not why they won. They win because of a good whistle. But I think it's interesting for people because as the game went on, I watched it. And you know what? Michigan State got a pretty damn good whistle in that game. What did you mean by that so that people can understand a little insight into how coaches watch basketball games?
Well, the more physical that game was going to get, the better it was going to be for Michigan State. Because for Michigan State to win that game, it had to be a rock fight. It had to be, you know, I mean, Hunter Dickinson, you can't guard him. And look, they got, Michigan State got a bunch of calls for two hands on the back and all that. But I just thought the more physical the game would be, the better it would be for Michigan State, because Michigan State was going to have to be physical to have a chance to defend Michigan. And early in the game, you could see the way the game was going to be officiated was going to be in favor of the more physical team, the team that made the first hit, the team that, if the ball was up in the air and you could cut a guy out hard, you cut him out hard. If you're going to contest a shot and you had your hands up, but you got body first into the guy's body, then it wasn't going to be a foul. And I as I watched that game, that's kind of what I saw. What did you see? Because you were watching a movie, and then I convinced you to flip over and watch the game.
No, I was watching golf. I like Sunday afternoon golf. It soothes my mind. The reason I bring that up is because a lot of people are going to say, well, he means that Michigan State was getting all the calls. No, and no, that's not what we're saying at all. I just think it's interesting because I saw the same thing that you said. There are some games where actually, it changes in the middle. Some games go from, well, we're going to let you play physical, and it morphs into, well, we're going to call every touch foul. But I agree exactly with what you said, but I did think it's fascinating for people that want to watch a game like a coach. I'll give you something else. If you want to watch a game like a coach, don't ever watch the ball. Like, I never watched the ball. I never watched the ball in football. The great Urban Meyer, name drop, taught me to watch the line, and the line tells you what's going to happen. I literally never watched the ball. Back to the Big Ten ACC, or excuse me, the Big Ten tournament. I'm going to tell you the game, my mind. It's Indiana Rutgers. It's Thursday night. Why? Well, two reasons. Number one, Indiana's playing to go to the NCAA tournament. Maybe they've got no chance, but if you beat Rutgers and then you beat Illinois the next time, maybe you do have a chance. The other thing is, I think there's two teams in the Big Ten, and Rutgers has turned it around a little bit, that were playing poorly. Rutgers is now playing pretty good. They had a nice overtime win the other day. Maryland is the other team against Michigan State. I think Michigan State's in, but Maryland last night, I can't believe how quickly they just went away. Like, they went from 6-0 to losing a game by 6-8, whatever it was, so fast. I turned it off when the game was going to be over. I could not believe Maryland's playing poorly. Wisconsin's playing poorly. Wisconsin's going to have to play the winner of Penn State and Nebraska. That'll be Penn State, and that'll be a heck of a game. But, Seth, the game I'm looking at, let's be honest. Indiana has played their way out of the NCAA tournament. They may have played Archie Miller out of a job, depending on what happens here. So that's the most interesting game of this tournament for me early.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. And I watched Indiana this past weekend, and I said this, and I really mean it. When you think about Indiana basketball, I mean, like, they were 1-for-11 from the three-point line in the first
game. It's unbelievable.
I they can't shoot it. They can't shoot it. They get some shots. They don't have shot makers. To me, they're offensively challenged. And part of the big reason they're offensively challenged is because they literally don't have finishers. And I don't mean finishers at the rim. They don't have shot makers. It's hard to fathom. Just, you know, my image of Indiana basketball is a bunch of dudes that can make shots, and they don't have them. And I said it at halftime. It's hard for me to imagine the state of Indiana and not have a team that doesn't have dudes that can make shots. You know, to me, that's a problem. Do they play hard? I think they play fairly hard. I have been watching Trayce Jackson-Davis. I don't like his grit as much as I liked it earlier in the season. I think he's got to be grittier. And I don't mean because he's always going to get numbers, but he's got to be grittier in terms of impacting winning. But I also think that he gets frustrated probably to an extent, because now the court just shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. That game's going to be interesting. Rutgers can, you know, winning at Minnesota is no easy feat. And even without Kalischer, Rutgers, I would think, feels they're in, but it would behoove them to beat Indiana. You know, it's just like Michigan State feels they're in. I mean, they got three top five wins in the last, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Who else?
Yeah.
But it behooves them to beat Maryland, who's a tough matchup for them. Maryland whooped them pretty good the last time they played. That was coming off playing three games in 6 days. So I agree that Thursday, that's going to be the biggest matchup. And then just in a big picture, so we could hit a bunch of leagues, how big is Eli Brooks potentially being out for Michigan?
Well, last time he was out, what happened? I mean, they went to Minnesota and got their brains beat out. And I'll tell you what, people can say that when they went to Minnesota, Eli Brooks, they would have gotten beat anyway. Seth, I'm telling you, I did the game. And Eli Brooks not being there, as you always talk about, two-point guards. No, you kidding me? That's a big, big, big deal. Very big deal. And how big is it? Let's go the other way. How big is it that Joey Hauser's starting to play pretty well? That's pretty big. How big is it that Bingham is starting to play pretty well? How big is it? Let's go positive here. How big is it that Ayo Dosunmu all of a sudden came back for Illinois? It could be the best team in the country. I'm just saying, I'm anxious as hell to see the Big Ten tournament. You want to go to the ACC tournament?
Yeah. The one thing about, I think Tom's done a good job. We can't talk about Michigan State without Rocket Watts. Had his best career. I mean, Rocket Watts played like a ball guard, and he attacked. He was aggressive. He was confident. Like, Rocket Watts getting off to a good start in a game is so important.
I would argue Rocket Watts at some point in the game playing really well is important. Like, I agree with you. I thought Rocket Watts played yesterday against Michigan the way I thought Rocket Watts would play this year. Like, I thought that – I'm not saying the guy would go average 20 or whatever, but I'm just saying I thought he would be that guy for most of the year. And when he is, hey, When he plays hard defensively and is engaged, when he shoots the ball from the top of the key after a couple bounces, I expect it to go in.
Yeah.
When he's throwing the ball all over the place, I think it's a bad shot. You know what I mean? That's the way I look at it.
I agree. No, I agree. Yeah. And Joey Hauser playing less minutes in a different role is really good.
Really good.
All right. What league you want to go to next?
I'm going to talk about Syracuse, North Carolina State in the ACC tournament, big boy.
It's the biggest opening round game.
It is. Tell the folks why. Why do you see why?
It's the biggest opening round game because if you look, people don't understand that you're looking at a Syracuse team. They're 1-6 against Quad One. All those games, but the win were on the road because of the way the schedule laid out and because of the pauses they were in. All right, they played all their Quad One games on the road. When you play a good team on the road, it's going to be harder. That's just the way it is. They don't have losses against Quad Two and Quad Three. They just don't. So NC State's won, I think, 4 in a row right now. Thunderbird's playing at a very, very high level. Manny Bates protects the rim, which is an issue, and gets to the glass. So does Jericho Helms. And their guards are growing up. Cam Thomas and those guards, all of a sudden they lose the Daniels kid, but now those freshman guards are getting the minutes, and they are growing up. That's a tough matchup. But if I'm not mistaken, NC State is 2-0 against Syracuse this season. I think.
Let me go a couple of directions. Number one, you mentioned Daniels out, who's their guy, and all of a sudden guards step up. See, that to me is what college basketball is about. And then number two, do you buy into the whole thing about, well, it's hard to beat a team three times? I always thought it was hard to beat a team one time. Yeah. You know, a good team, you know what I mean? I mean, hard to beat a team three times. Yeah, sure, of course. But one time ain't easy, brother.
That whole thing is like, well, you know, that team just wasn't ready to play today. Yeah, they were ready to play. Right. Didn't play well. Like not like they were, you know, so-and-so, Michigan, and before the Illinois game, they just weren't ready to play. No, they were ready to play. And you know what? Illinois took the fight to them. It's not like those kids walking out of the locker room going, boy, I'll tell you one thing, I'm not ready to play. You know, man, we got to play a game. Oh, my God, we got to play a game. Oh, he wants us to play hard. This isn't a scrimmage. That's like one of those things that people say that have no understanding of what goes into prepare for a game.
There's a lot of those people out there, brother. Let me say this. All of a sudden, the great Dave O'Brien and I, Saturday at 4:00, had the ACC championship game because Virginia at Louisville, because of Florida State losing, gets the number one seed. Now, let me ask you a question. How many people that follow college basketball would realize that Virginia is now the number one seed in this tournament? And I'll tell you something else. What I saw, Virginia, dangerous ball club. I mean, that may be a silly thing to say. That may be an obvious thing to say, but they got a big that blocked shots. They played their second unit for basically the last 8 minutes of the game because of how well they were defending. Well, Intensi can make shots. Murphy is from the left to right elbow. I mean, honest to God, he is ridiculously good. I'm not in love with T.A. Clark, and I don't think you are either, late with the ball, but that's what they do. People that haven't paid attention, the number one seed in the ACC tournament is not Florida State, Duke, North Carolina. It's Virginia again, Seth.
Well, here's the deal. 5 of the last 8 years, Virginia has won the regular season.
What I'm saying.
Here is the hierarchy. Let's be real, not for the guy, the traditionalists. But before we get into that game, let's be real. The hierarchy of the ACC right now, in this moment of time, how it stands over the last 5 years, is Virginia, Florida State, Duke, and North Carolina. And I know for the traditional basketball ACC fans that look at it as blue bloods, that's just the way it is. Second thing, I spent all season long saying, what's wrong with Virginia? Well, Virginia doesn't call it. G.K.A. Clark holds onto the ball too long. They invert their offense, but they're missing Diakite. They're missing Braxton Key. So I am an idiot. because I'll tell you what Tony Bennett did. He all he did was just continue. All right, let's put a Band-Aid on that. Let's put a Band-Aid on that. We got to get a little bit better over here. We got to get a little bit better over here. Oh, Virginia don't have a guy that can break it down and get a good shot. That's why Florida State took him out. No, Florida State was better that day. So I'm not totally sold on making a deep run, but I they're hard to beat. And I love the Beekman kid. I really do. I think he gives him a real perimeter defender. Now, my last thing about that Florida State losing to Final Four Mike Bray, I'll tell you what's disgusting. And no one, you know, what's disgusting is a bunch of students booing Mike Bray in introductions prior to the Florida State Notre Dame game. And here's my reason why. Because those students don't even understand the history of what Mike Bray has accomplished. They don't understand the back-to-back Elite Eights in the Sweet 16. They don't even know that Bonzi Colson got hurt or they would have had another NCAA tournament bid. They don't understand the academic requirements at Notre Dame are different than everyone else in the ACC. But more importantly, they don't understand the essence of what Mike Bray has built at Notre Dame. That every one of those guys will be back next year. And I love that last week, Pat Connaughton went to Twitter and absolutely stood up for his guy. And Rex Pfluger did the same thing. And Mike Bray can coach. He didn't forget how to coach. They slipped on it on a recruiting class. But I mean, you know, to me, like Notre Dame, first of all, student body, come on, man, you don't even fill the place most of the night, even last year. Obviously, you can't this year, but I just thought it was bad, really, really bad taste. Who wins the ACC?
I think I what I saw, and you're going to think this is crazy, what I saw with Florida State was the best team in the ACC in the second half. I think it's a terrible loss for Florida State. They didn't, but in the first half, Florida State looked like a team that came out to play a game. In the second half, Florida State looked like defensively one of the best teams in the country, I thought anyway. I'm going to stick with Florida State. I'm not going to say Duke's going to make a run. I'm not going to say North Carolina's going to make a run. I'm not going to say Louisville's going to make a run. I do think Virginia can play and play really well, and I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't Virginia against Florida State in the final. And in that case, I'd take Florida State winning. I got Florida State winning.
How about Virginia Tech's been on pause now for 2 weeks? We don't know if it's the virus or contact.
Yeah.
Like you can't get any information out of them. Is it the virus or is it contact tracing? But they're like, to me, the Riddler. They're a big question mark. Like no one knows what they're going to be. So I think they're the biggest question. And let me ask you this. If you are any of these teams and you know you've got to have 7 consecutive days of negative tests, and I don't even know if the ACC is testing every single day. I guess they probably are starting Wednesday, I would think, because you have to have 7 consecutive negative tests. But just in general, I mean, if you're North Carolina, Louisville, Clemson, excluding Syracuse, I mean, playing 4 games in 4 days and then flipping around, you don't play again until the next Friday. So I don't think that's an issue to you because they moved the tournament back to Friday.
Nope. The only thing that I think is an issue right now is how you play. Is your point guard turning it over? Is he not turning it over? Seth, may I give a shout out to the hottest team in college basketball, the Elon Phoenix?
Of course. Who's the director of basketball operations there?
The director of basketball operations got a big shout out. Andrew Dockett's got a big shout out from Mike Schragi, the head coach, because director of basketball operations, Andrew Dockett, and the entire team have worked really hard. They were 0-7 in the league. They've won their last 5. Players are in busting it hard. And Mike Schragi has done a great job with that team, turning a team that, you know what, Seth, lost its 2 leading scorers, could have gone south because of COVID. But Mike Schragi, the head coach, has done a remarkable job of turning this around. They've won 5 in a row. They just beat the number 1 seed after being down 15 in the second half. Mike Schragi, former Chris Holtman assistant, former Duke assistant, former Stanford assistant, former manager of us, Dan Dockett at IU. Mike Schragi and Elon has a big one today, but they're the hottest team in North Carolina. Salute, Elon! The Phoenix have risen under the leadership of Mike Schragi.
There you go. There's your CAA update brought to you by Dan Dockett, ladies and gentlemen. Dan, before we move on, I need to mention the latest 30 for 30 podcast, March 11th, 2020. It's the story of the day. The NBA shutdown and the pandemic became real for many Americans. As told by those who lived the events of that day and built entirely in archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert and Dr. Anthony Fauci. March 11th, 2020, will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. 30 for 30 Podcast presents March 11th, 2020. Subscribe and listen now wherever you get your podcasts. We are fired up to welcome in the guru of all gurus, the author of Bracketology, March Madness, College Basketball, and the creation of a national obsession. I got a question, Joe. The book is great, but could you get a shorter title? I mean, goodness gracious, that's the longest title in the history of books. I just say Bracketology by Joey Brackets. Boom, end of conversation.
Well, that works for me. And if, you know, full disclosure, we're among friends. My choice for the title was On the Bubble. And I was going to dedicate it to one of you. And I'll let you guys figure out who.
Well, that's really not very nice. I mean, if you did that, then I would have had to write a forward. And I mean, you know, you wouldn't have wanted that.
I would have had Seth write the forward, and I would have had Dan write the backward. And that would have been perfect.
All right. Speaking of backwards and forward, you got to believe Michigan State's safely in, even if they lose to Maryland. All right.
Agreed.
Agreed? Is that a yes and yes? So, coming into championship week, who and what games are you most looking at as either playing their way in? And we're not talking about Duke, all right? So we're not talking about Duke. They're out of the conversation. All right. What games are you looking forward to saying that can kind of crystallize a team in one way or another?
Yeah, I would say the early, you know, major conference games that matter the most that I will absolutely be locked in on would be any games that involve my good friend, Coach Boeheim and Syracuse. I can't believe here we are again. I thought maybe by taking, you know, a year off, maybe, you know, I'd be relieved of having Syracuse as a bubble team. But here we are. So that's first. I think Seton Hall St. John's in the Big East is a huge game. You know, the Johnnies are a bit under the radar, but they finished pretty strong. They have that win over Villanova when Villanova was still at full strength. So I think that's gigantic. Less interest now in Michigan State, Maryland, although, you know, both are 9 and 11. Maryland may be going in the wrong direction, losing to Northwestern and now Penn State here at the end of the regular season. So I'll be watching Mark Turgeon and the Terps. And then for the Night Owls among us, there's a whole cluster of bubble teams in the Mountain West. Boise, Utah State, Colorado State, and they're not going to be able to help but play one another, at least when we get to the semifinals of that league. So I know two people that are going to be up watching those games, myself and anyone affiliated with Drake, because that's right. Kind of where we're at.
So what's your take on Drake?
At this moment, I have them slightly in. I think there are more mitigating circumstances in their favor, and by that I mean injuries and pandemic considerations. But they could easily be passed because, you know, we see it every year. There's a team that's holding on, but can't do anything to help itself. I think the two hardest teams to evaluate right now are Drake and St. Louis. A, because they have the most mitigating circumstances, and B, because they're done. Part of me even suggests, wink, wink, that they should play each other this week because they can, and why not? But I don't get to make those decisions, and I would say Drake more in, St. Louis more out, and that's unfortunate. I think St. Louis is a really good team. I just think, and I mean, Seth, you had that Friday night game at Dayton and we talked about it. Yeah. Like, their two biggest games of the year at Dayton and in this conference tournament against St. Bonaventure. And you know I'm not an eye test guy, but they were terrible in both of those games. And it's not reflective of who they are, but the committee can't guess and say, well, I really think they're better than that. Like, you are what you are.
Hey, Joey Brackets, what are you seeing in the Big 12? What's interesting there for folks looking at NCAA tournament bids?
I think it's just a pecking order thing, Dan, meaning, like, how are they going to rank them within the conference? The top seven are getting bids, period. TCU, Iowa State, K-State are not getting bids, you know, unless they win four games in 4 days. And if you look at who they'd have to beat to win four games in 4 days, you would think that pretty unlikely. Of course, I also thought it was pretty unlikely that Michigan State would beat Illinois, Michigan, and Ohio State back to back to back. But here we are. So, Baylor's going to be a one seed, of course. I still think West Virginia is going to find its way to the two line because I think they're good enough. And they look, all these teams have the wins. Is Cade Cunningham going to be at full strength? And, you know, they could win this tournament. Heck, Oklahoma State could be a two. I have Texas slightly ahead of Kansas because they swept KU. And then, you know, Texas Tech is more like a five to me, but they think they're a four. Oklahoma is probably the only one trending a little bit down at this point, but I think their floor is a six. So you're looking at, you know, seven Big 12 teams, Dan, top six seeds. I mean, they could all play in the second weekend. I don't think that would surprise anyone.
I'm always big on let's see how these things play out. So from your standpoint, the regular season is over. What's the best league?
I think the Big Ten was the best league. I mean, two number one seeds and two number two seeds is extraordinary. In fact, it's never happened that the same conference has put four teams on the top two lines. Now, Ohio State could fall off, okay? And then, you know, that distinction would be going away. But what's the worst? They're going to be a three? You know, twice we've had three number one seeds from the same league. The ACC did it in 2019, the last tournament, with Virginia, Carolina, and Duke. And the Big East did it way back, you know, when they had 73 members in the conference and they couldn't help it. Having said that, Baylor's in the Big 12. They sure look like they're back. And in the classic of would you take so-and-so or the field, right? Like, you always take the field. Except if somebody said to me, Gonzaga, Baylor, or the field, I'd be pretty tempted.
Right.
I mean, and, right? Wouldn't you?
Hey, if you're Michigan in there, be like, I'm more tempted.
Right. You know, if somebody said, give me the one seed. Like, I know all four one seeds haven't made it through in the same year since 08, and it's only happened once. Ever, but there does seem to be a line, a separation, just in terms of, like, I think of it as, you know, once the tournament starts, I get to stop thinking like a bracketologist, and I get to start thinking like a fan and hopefully a basketball person. And I think, all right, like, if I am the director of basketball operations for Seth Greenberg, or Dan Dockett, and they're asking me to begin the skeleton of a scouting report, which is, trust me, the limit of my competence. You just look and say, man, I'm afraid of that guy, and that guy, right? And you know, those four teams have a lot of that guys. And there's a clear drop-off after that. I mean, even if Iowa's next, right, you know, and we don't know about Wieskamp now, but, you know, obviously Iowa has the guy, but it's been proven that he can be neutralized a little bit, at least with size. So, I might pick all 4-1 seeds this year. And that's really boring, but that's what I believe.
Let me ask you about Creighton. Like, just win games? I mean, well, let's say they lose in their tournament, which, you know, maybe they will.
Right.
What does the committee do with the coaching situation there?
Bluntly, I think they're going to ignore it because I think it's the only logical thing to do. As wondrous as you guys are on the sidelines, you're still scoreless in your coaching careers.
Yeah, and that's cute, but that's not, I mean, there's a reason certain coaches win all the time. Let me ask you.
No, I know that. Let me ask you. I know that, but their resume.
We're not talking about Duke, right? Huh? We're not talking about Duke. Let's talk about a team that's more interesting. Let's talk about a team like Syracuse, who all their quad one losses are on the road. Will the committee look at that differently than, like, they're 1-6 in quad one, right? All right, all those losses are on the road. How will the committee look at that? They have one game, two, three.
Yeah. Look, they have one game that keeps sliding between quad one and quad two. But, you know, for me, as much as we've said, and I know it's happened on this show, that teams get bids, not leagues, I really find the evaluation of Syracuse to be more about what you think of the ACC. Because, you know, like, do you think that Virginia Tech and Carolina and Clemson are really good wins or just good wins? You know what I mean? Like, in a normal year, we go, oh, they're in, right? Wouldn't we say that? But
I don't know. I was in a lot of abnormal years.
No, I know you were in an abnormal year. And when I think of abnormal, you're one of the first people that comes to mind, Seth. I love you. But, like, seriously, this is, like, some of those teams at Virginia Tech that you had would be at the top of this ACC. Right. You know, with Florida State. They're a little bit different, right? But the rest of it is just regular good. There's nothing special, is there? Am I missing something?
Hey, let me, before I got so rudely interrupted about Duke, let me finish my point, okay? All right? So you've got a team like Duke, all right? Let's say they win a few games. Do you look at their team post-Jalen Johnson? And the second part, again, before I was so rudely interrupted, are there teams like that you're going to say, hey, look, before, when they didn't have this guy, we had a look at, now they have this guy. You see what I'm saying, Joe? Are there teams that injury or defections influence in this tournament on the bubble? Is anybody like that?
Drake.
Well, exactly. I was just going to say, like, their best player is, you know,
out.
He's got a week plus off now. It's really almost 2 weeks, right? Now,
right. How do you evaluate like, that?
Their point guard.
Well.
Temple.
Right. Again, I'm Drake.
And Roman Penn.
Like, if I'm Drake and he's healthy, like on Thursday or Friday, I call up, I don't know, you want to come and play? And run up and down the court a few times and send the tape. Like, because, I mean, they're clearly a tournament level team with them. So, and on the Duke thing, I think if you're going to play the post Jalen Johnson thing, then you have to honestly look at it and say, take the name off the jersey, right? We're talking about a 500 team on a 3-game losing streak in the weakest ACC we've seen in some time. And to me, that sounds like 99 times out of 100, we'd say, you better win your conference tournament.
Does Indiana have any shot, speaking of boring teams?
They have a shot because they have scheduled games that they can win. But they sure look like toast to me.
Yeah, me too.
So Dan, as before, you know, my friend hijacked this interview, which he has, because he's a very good interviewer, quite honestly, a much better interviewer than I am. So I have no problem with it. I just refuse to talk about Duke because, like, let's talk about teams that are serious. Like, you know, Drake, no Roman Penn, no Ty Kempel. I mean, that's real. Those are two players that are out. People forget that Roman Penn.
Right. Penn's not coming back.
Exactly. And, you know, and Tank might come back, but Penn is a really, really good player. Let's before we let you go, let's go out to the West Coast. All right. What are you doing with the Pac-12, and what are you doing with the Mountain West? Like the Mountain West, we said there are four teams. I mean, they legitimately could Boise's lost three in a row, but Boise's had a pretty good year. San Diego State obviously has had a good year. Colorado State is playing really, really well. I mean, what Utah State's in the conversation, but the league's not great. Nevada's had some good wins. Like, what's realistic for the Mountain West and what's realistic for the Pac-12?
Well, the Pac-12, I think, has three teams that could be in the second weekend: Southern Cal, Colorado, and Oregon, which is playing the best of late. You know, after that, I think UCLA, in a way, has overachieved, you know, to their credit, but they strike me as a just happy to be here kind of team. Maybe win a game in the right matchup, but, you know, they're going to get in. They're going to be like probably a 9 or a 10 without a deep run. But Mick's done a nice job there with, you know, losing their best guy and you know, keeping their heads above water. Now, the Mountain West, it's weird, guys, because I look at the Mountain West and I look at the American, okay? And sometimes it's just luck. Like, if you take the four Mountain West teams, San Diego State, Boise, Colorado State, Utah State, in whatever order you want, okay, and you put them with Houston, Memphis, SMU, and Wichita. Now, obviously, Houston's a cut above everyone in that group. But the other seven are all pretty comparable, right? But the games didn't fall their way in the American, right? Like, nobody but Wichita was able to beat Houston, in part because they didn't all get to play Houston home and away. Whereas in the Mountain West, because of those back-to-backs at one site, now their home road was uneven, but they mostly got to play all the games. And that has added up for the Colorado States, the Boise States, and the Utah States. And I think that, you know, somebody's going to cash an extra unit on Selection Sunday because of luck in the Mountain West. I'm not saying that's fair or that's right, just that that's what is. And my own personal observation is, while Colorado State and Boise are slightly in at the moment and Utah State is slightly out, at least on my board, I think of the ones chasing San Diego State, Utah State is the most dangerous because they have the best player.
Joe, Bryson DeChambeau crushed a 377-yard drive yesterday. If you were going to bet on, like, taking Masters prediction bracketology, where would Bryson DeChambeau fall? Would he be a number one seed?
Absolutely. And you guys ready for this? This is a podcast, right? So I can ramble a bit. It won't be long, but it's a little off topic. So what golf tournament, what PGA golf tournament would you think would most interest the bracketologist?
US Open.
The match play where they have four brackets of 16.
Ah, bada bing.
Right? Coming up in a couple weeks.
Well, if I played Doncic in that match play, you could just advance me.
That's right. But
we're one
and
one.
Guys.
Hey,
guys.
Joe,
I'm not done. I'm going to be on their selection show in a couple weeks for their bracket.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
How cool is that?
Hey, and that's why if you have any interest in really understanding the passion of the Font NCAA tournament and the selection process, you've got to get bracketology.
Oh,
and
sad.
I'm not even going to give
you're
the
very
whole
kind.
Title. Just look, Joe Lunardi, bracketology on Amazon, and you know what? You'll be better off for it.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, this is the week we hide and put on a helmet and hope for the best. And I'm thankful for you guys, and I'm thankful that we have a tournament.
No doubt about it. Joey Brackett, you're the best, baby. Get back in the bunker now. Get back in the bunker.
Hey.
Yeah, I got to study those golfers.
Damn right. You act like I don't know nothing, Seth. I knew he was doing that.
You're one of the great, brilliant interviewers in the history of interviewing.
Well, hey, are you a Dukist?
A Dukist? What does a Dukist mean?
Are you an anti-Dukeite?
No, I just think we spent so much time talking about a team that for the last 2 weeks wasn't in the tournament, and we
play the hits.
Look, I'm not chasing another click. I really don't care. If you don't want to follow me, I have no problem with it.
Let me ask you two questions.
I'm very well at night.
Can I ask you two questions?
Sure.
One, of the quote blue bloods that we've talked about, can one make a run through their conference tournament and win the conference tournament? Number two, have you seen and I'm going to go Atlantic 10, Mountain West, CAA, whatever. Have you seen a team in that can get to the Sweet 16?
That is interesting. First of all, I think North Carolina can make a run to the finals. North Carolina is interesting to me. It all depends on if they decide to throw the ball to their own team. But North Carolina will play the winner of Wake and Notre Dame. They should win that. Notre Dame, they play Virginia Tech. That's a game they're going to have to show discipline, but they can win that. You know, they beat Florida State in that comeback game. They could get to the finals of their conference tournament. It's number one.
Yeah.
Michigan State, I do not think they can if we're talking about them as a blue blood. I think Kansas, who's not had a great year, but not Baylor, could get to the finals of their tournament. They're playing better. There's no doubt about it. We didn't even talk about the SEC because the SEC to me is.
Well, that's why I brought up the blue bloods. Can Kentucky make a run? I don't see it.
I don't see it. I don't think their guard play could be consistent enough, Dan. I mean, I think that their guard play in late games, they haven't played well enough at the end of a game to win close games. Conference tournament games are mostly close games. I don't see it. I mean, it was great. They played great against South Carolina, but I don't see that coming from them. I really don't. In terms of the others, yeah, it's interesting. I think VCU has a legitimate shot because of style of play and even St. Bonaventure. St. Bonaventure is a good basketball team. They don't turn it over. They rebound the ball. Kyle Loftham is a legitimate point guard. They're undersized, but they're fearless. And Mark Schmidt should be under serious consideration for the Boston College job. He probably won't get it, but he's done an amazing – the consistency of that team – and that program, one of the hardest jobs in America, only in New York, and the confidence he builds in his team, I think is really, really special. I mean, I really do. I think it's incredible. Is there a team in the MAC that can make a run? Being you, the MAC.
I think Buffalo's interesting. I think Toledo's the best team. Maren Jackson's great guard, tough guard. Buffalo is one of those teams built in the image of Nate Oates, you know, where you're going to shoot the hell out of it. You're going to shoot it a bunch. You're going to drive it. You're going to try to get to 80. And if you can get to 80, I think you can win a game in the NCAA tournament. I don't think you're winning if you're a MAC team. I don't think you're winning in the 50s. But I'm going to give you a team that I absolutely love, Seth. I don't like them. I love them. And that's Loyola Chicago. The Krautwig kid, for those of you that remember, he was the big old freshman center when they went to the Final Four and the Custers were making all the shots and all that stuff. But I'm just telling you, Cameron Krautwig is Chicago. He looks like Chicago. He looks like a Blues brother. Like, that's what his coach, he goes, he's just Chicago. Like, and you know this, I know this, we all know this. You gotta have a certain togetherness as a group to be uber successful at the mid-major and even at the major level.
Yeah.
You've got to have. And Cameron Krautwig is that guy. He's the Seinfeld. He's the Jerry. He's the guy that everybody likes hanging around. He gives everybody confidence. And I'm telling you, Seth, I like their team so much that I'm not saying they're going to the Final Four. Final Four is a dream. You make shots, you keep making shots, you make shots at the end. But give me, I'll tell you what, I'll take Loyola Chicago. And if I see them up against me and I'm a high major or anybody in this tournament, I'm looking sideways, man. That's a tough get. They're tough.
And, you know, it's not just him, because I'll tell you that Brandon Norris kid, he's not afraid of anything. And the Williamson kid who defends, like, look, they don't turn it over. They rebound the ball. They turn you over. They got enough shot makers. I look at Cameron Krautwig as he's the Nikola Jokic of college basketball.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, he's good. And then, you know, you got Sister Jean. I mean, it doesn't get much better. So, I mean, you get a little Sister Jean, a little Sister Jean love, and then you get, you get Porter Moser, who's kind of like a less of a curmudgeon Rick Majerus with his little lines and everything.
He's the Brad Pitt of college basketball. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but he's got that. If you listen to him, it's like curmudgeonish, you know, where he talks about his team, and, you know, he's kind of like, you know, glib, which I like. I like glib. So, I mean, there you go. We covered a good number of them.
Hey, like, last thing, Big East tournament.
We're going to cover?
Big East and Big 12, too. Who's the winner for you guys?
Big East.
Oh, you got a Big 12. I got Baylor winning the Big 12.
I got Baylor winning the Big 12. How does West Virginia, who you all love, you guys love West Virginia, how do they lose to Oklahoma State without Cade Cunningham? I got real questions about West Virginia when I saw that happen. I'm sorry. I know I'm a lightning rod in a lot of ways, particularly West Virginia fans, but if you're really good, you beat Cade Cunningham less. So I've got Baylor winning that. The Big East, another injury. Was a Moore kid going to be out now maybe for Villanova? Ay, ay, ay. Is that thing wide open? Is Creighton the best team?
I think Creighton, no. I've got the Big East. I've got the Fighting Huskies of Danny Hurley. I've got James Booknight. You were high on the con. You're back high on the con. The con has developed depth when Booknight was out. RJ Cole is playing better. Gaffney had a great game the other day. They play hard as hell. I mean, hard as hell. We were going to do a thing, but our show ran over. Team that plays with the biggest chip on their shoulder. And I said, well, the coach that coaches with the biggest chip on his shoulder is Danny Hurley. So therefore, I was going to say that the team that plays with the biggest chip on his shoulder reflects their coach. And I think the con in their return to the Big East is going to hang another Big East banner.
I agree. You're right. I'm wrong. Thoughts with Colin Gillespie and the people at Villanova. Injuries are certainly a part of it. We all know that, but you certainly hate to see kids get injured no matter what time of year. I know people say, well, going into the tournament, you and I have both dealt and been in the hospital rooms and stayed overnight with kids that have ACLs and Achilles and all kind of things. And we know the pain and the toughness that you have to come back. But you know what? I do think because of injuries, frankly, let's be honest. I do think because of injuries, Villanova is going to, it's a struggle now. And I think it opens up a door for others. And I think UConn, I've loved this team for a long time, Seth.
I agree. And what you just said, whether it's Joe Wieskamp, Eli Brooks, obviously Connor Gillespie, seeing these kids go down, especially this year with everything that they've been through, just breaks your heart, man. It breaks your heart. I mean, these are, you know, incredible young guys that are great teammates and, you know, gotten through the whole season, testing every day and, you know, pregame meals in your room, you know, in a bag and, you know, limited access to most anyone. And then you get to the finish line and you get hurt the last week of the season. It just,
it's horrible.
I talked to Jay a little bit after Collins thing. I mean, Colin Gillespie and Eli Brooks, those guys are just great leaders, and that's just a great reflection of college basketball. And it just, you know, for all the players that have gotten us to this point, and then to all the administrators and commissioners and ADs and trainers and officials and all the people that have, you know, kind of been on this journey this year, it's been incredible to see anyone go through that and then get playing in the tournament taken away from them, whether it's your conference tournament or the NCAA tournament. brutal, absolutely brutal. Well, hey, you know what? That's just a precursor to Greenberg and Dockage breaking down the bracket on Sunday, A to Z. You can have bracketology by Joey Brackets, but you can have bracket results so that you have someone who can make you some cash.
Woo!
Greenberg and Dockage. We will do it on Sunday. It'll probably be posted Monday. So hold everything. Don't fill out your bracket because you know what? You need the knowledge. You need what's inside our craniums and our noggins because we're going to make someone money if you're listening.
You know what, Seth? May I say this before we go?
Say whatever you want. It's our show.
Pat McAfee's a friend of mine. Pat McAfee had me on his show 2 years ago, last tournament, to give predictions. I won Pat McAfee a free trip to Vegas. You know what I got out of it?
Nothing.
Damn right. And you know what I don't want out of it? I don't want nothing. You know what I want to do? I just want to make you all some money come Selection Sunday and throughout the entire month of March. Greenberg and Dockage will make you money. Gambling's legal in Indiana.
Just saying.
Thanks for listening to the Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage podcast.